I walked north in the sun, and the pickup moved slowly alongside, keeping pace. The guy was still hunched forward, staring sideways. I stretched out a couple of steps, and the truck sped up to keep station. Then I stopped dead, and he overshot. I stood there. The guy evidently decided backing up wasn't on his agenda. He floored it and took off with a roar. I shrugged and carried on. Reached the barber shop, ducked under the striped awning and tried the door. Unlocked. I went in. Like everything else in Margrave, the barber shop looked wonderful. It gleamed with ancient chairs and fittings lovingly polished and maintained. It had the kind of barbershop gear everybody tore out 30 years ago. Now everybody wants it back. They pay a fortune for it because it recreates the way people want America to look, the way they think it used to look. It's certainly the way I thought it used to look. I would sit in some schoolyard in Manila or Munich and imagine green lawns and trees and flags and a gleaming chrome barbershop like this one. It was run by two old black guys. They were just hanging out there, not really open for business, not really closed. But they indicated they would serve me. Like, they were there and I was there, so why not? And I guess I looked like an urgent case. I asked them for the works, a shave, a haircut, a hot towel, and a shoe shine. There were framed newspaper front pages here and there on the walls. Big headlines. Roosevelt dies. VJ Day. JFK assassinated. Martin Luther King murdered. There was an old mahogany table radio thumping warmly away. The new Sunday paper was crisply folded on a bench in the window. The old guys mixed up soapy lather in a bowl, stropped a straight razor, rinsed the shaving brush. They shrouded me with towels and got to work. One guy shaved me with the old straight razor. The other guy stood around doing not much of anything. I figured maybe he came into play later. The busy guy started chatting away, like barbers do. Told me the history of his business. The two of them had been buddies since childhood. Always lived here in Margrave since way back. Started out as barbers way before the World War II. Apprenticed in Atlanta, opened the shop together as young men. Moved it to this location when the old neighborhood was razed. He told me the history of the county from a barber's perspective. Listed the personalities who'd been in and out of these old chairs. Told me about all kinds of people. "So, tell me about the Kleiners," I said. He was a chatty guy, but that question shut him up. He stopped work and thought about it.
"I can't help you with that inquiry, that's for sure," he said. "That's a subject we prefer not to discuss in here. Best if you ask me about somebody else altogether."
I shrugged under the shroud of towels. "Okay," I said. "You ever heard of Blind Blake?"
"Ooh, him I heard of, that's for sure," the old man said. "That's a guy we can discuss no problem at all."
"Great," I said. "So what can you tell me?"
"He was here, time to time, way back," he said. "Born in Jacksonville, Florida, they say, just over the state line. Used to kind of trek on up from there, you know, through here, through Atlanta, all the way up north to Chicago, and then trek all the way back down again, back through Atlanta, back through here, back home." "Very different then, you know. No highway, no automobiles, at least not for a poor black man and his friends, all walking or riding on the freight cars."
"You ever hear him play?" I asked him. He stopped work again and looked at me.
"Man, I'm 74 years old," he said. "This was back when I was just a little boy. We're talking about Blind Blake here. Guys like that played in bars. Never was in no bars when I was a little boy, you understand. I would have got my behind whooped real good if I had been. You should talk to my partner here. He's a whole lot older than I am. He may have heard him play, only he may not remember it because, he don't remember much. Not even what he ate for breakfast. Am I right? Hey, my old friend, what you eat for breakfast?
The other old guy creaked over and leaned up on the next sink to mine. He was a gnarled old fella, the color of the mahogany radio.
I don't know what I ate for breakfast, he said. Don't even know if I ate any breakfast at all. But listen up, I may be an old guy, but the truth is, old guys remember stuff real well. Not recent things, you understand, but old things. You've got to imagine your memory like an old bucket, you know? Once it's filled up with old stuff, there ain't nowhere to get new stuff in. Nowhere at all, you understand? So I don't remember any new stuff because my old bucket is all filled up with old stuff that happened way back. You understand what I'm saying here?
Sure, I understand, I said. So, way back, did you ever hear him play?
Who?
He said. I looked at both of them in turn. I wasn't sure whether this was some kind of a rehearsed routine. Blind Blake, I said. Did you ever hear him play?
No, I never heard him play, the old guy said. But my sister did. Got me a sister, more than about 90 years old, or thereabouts, may she be spared, still alive. She did a little singing way back, and she sang with old Blind Blake many a time.
She did, I said.
She sang with him? She sure did, said the gnarled old guy. She sang with just about anybody passing through. You got to remember, this old town lay right on the big road to Atlanta. That old kind of road out there used to come on down through here, straight on south into Florida. It was the only route through Georgia, north to south. Of course, now you got the highway runs right by without stopping off, and you got aeroplanes and all. No importance to Margrave now. Nobody coming on through anymore.
So Blind Blake stopped off here, I prompted him. And your sister sang with him?
Whew! Yeah, buddy, you stop off here, he said. North side of town was just pretty much a mess of bars and room and houses to cater to the folks passing through. All these fancy gardens between here and the firehouse is where the bars and the rooming houses used to be. All tore down now, or else all fell down. Been no passing trade at all for a real long time. But back then, whoa, it was a different kind of town altogether. Streamed the people in and out the whole time. Workers, crop pickers, drummers, fighters, hobos, truckers, musicians, all kinds of them guys used to stop off and play. And my old sister be right in there singing with them all.
And she remembers Blind Blake, I asked him.
Oh, she sure does, the old man said. Used to think he was the greatest thing alive. Says he used to play real sporty, real sporty indeed.
What happened to him? I said. Do you know? The old guy thought hard, trawled back through his fading memories. He shook his grizzled head a couple of times, then he took a wet towel from a hot box and put it over my face, started cutting my hair, ended up shaking his head with some kind of finality.
Can't rightly say, he said. He came back and forth on the road time to time. I remember that pretty well. 3-4 years later, he was gone. I was up in Atlanta for a spell. Wasn't here to know. Here'd tell somebody killed him. Maybe right here in my grave. Maybe not. Some kind of big trouble. Got him killed stone dead.
I sat listening to their old radio for a while. Then I gave them a 20 off my roll of bills and hurried out onto Main Street. Strode out north. It was nearly noon and the sun was baking. Hot for September. Nobody else was out walking. The black road blasted heat at me. Blind Blake had walked this road, maybe in the noon heat. Back when those old barbers had been boys, this had been the artery reaching north to Atlanta, Chicago, jobs, hope, money. Noon heat wouldn't have stopped anybody getting where they were going. But now, The road was just a smooth, blacktop byway going nowhere at all. It took me a few minutes in the heat to get up to the station house. I walked across its springy lawn, past another bronze statue, and pulled open the heavy glass entrance door, stepped into the chill inside. Roscoe was waiting for me, leaning on the reception counter. Behind her in the squad room, I could see Stevenson talking urgently into a telephone. Roscoe was pale and looking very worried.
"We found another body," she said.
"Where?" I asked her.
"Up at the warehouse again," she said. "The other side of the road this time, underneath the clover leaf where it's raised up."
"Who found it?" I said.
"Finley," she said. "He was up there this morning, poking around, looking for something to help us with the first one." "Some help, right? All he finds is another one."
"You know who this one is?" I asked her. She shook her head.
"Unidentified," she said. "Same as the first one."
"Where's Finley now?" I asked her.
"Gone to get Hubble," she said. "He thinks Hubble may know something about it."
I nodded. "How long was this one up there?" I said.
2 or 3 days, maybe," she said. "Finley says it could have been a double homicide on Thursday night."
I nodded again. Hubble did know something about it. This was the guy he had sent to meet with the tall investigator with the shaved head. He couldn't figure out how the guy had gotten away with it. But the guy hadn't gotten away with it. I heard a car in the lot outside, and then the big glass door sucked open. Finley stuck his head in. "Morgue, Roscoe," he said. "You too, Reacher." We followed him back outside into the heat. We all got into Roscoe's unmarked sedan, left Finley's car where he'd parked it. Roscoe drove. I sat in the back. Finley sat in the front passenger seat, twisted around so he could talk to the both of us at once. Roscoe nosed out of the police lot and headed south. "I can't find Hubble," Finley said, looking at me. "There's nobody up at his place. Did he say anything to you about going anywhere?"
"No," I said.
"Not a word. We hardly spoke all weekend." Finley grunted at me. "I need to find out what he knows about all this," he said. "This is serious shit, and he knows something about it. That's for damn sure. What did he tell you about it, Reacher?"
I didn't answer. I wasn't entirely sure whose side I was on yet.
Finley's, probably. But if Finley started blundering around in whatever Hubble was mixed up in, Hubble and his family were going to end up dead. No doubt about that. So I figured I should just stay impartial and then get the hell out of there as fast as possible. I didn't want to get involved.
"You try his mobile number?" I asked him.
Finley grunted and shook his head. "Switched off," he said. "Some automatic voice came on and told me."
"Did he come by and pick up his watch?" I asked him.
"His what?" he said.
"His watch," I said. "He left a $10,000 Rolex with Baker on Friday, when Baker was cuffing us for the ride out to Warburton. Did he come pick it up?"
"No," Finley said. "Nobody said so."
"Okay," I said. "So he's got some urgent business somewhere. Not even an asshole like Hubble's gonna forget about a $10,000 watch, right?"
"What urgent business?" Finley said. "What did he tell you about it?"
"He didn't tell me diddly," I said. "Like I told you, we hardly spoke."
Finley glared at me from the front seat.